Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and those you care about. We'll introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows, or many of them, to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way we can make a positive difference together. Now, I want all of you to know that I am grateful that you take your time to listen to, or in some cases, watch this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions. Please remember, this show exists for you. Now, I was told that I haven't mentioned this enough, so here goes. If you haven't gotten a free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your loved ones. And if you'd like to send them to us via our website, we'll read some of them on the air. Now, we have quite a show set up for you today. And I'm going to start with a question that came in to us. This one reads, "My name is Mary. I live in Chicago, and I love the informative guests you bring on. Unfortunately, I struggle with bowel issues and have tried nearly everything. My regular doctor put me on meds that seem to have made it worse. I tried a naturopathic doctor that did muscle testing, in which he referred to it as ART. He said I have parasites, adding that medical doctors don't know how to test for parasites. And he put me on tinctures that were supposed to kill off the parasites. When I told his office I felt worse, they called it die-off and said it's natural. Well, it's been a couple of months, and I feel nauseous almost every day. I'm very careful with what I eat, and yet I can't seem to get any better. Have you had a guest that has addressed this issue? If so, which one?" Well, I think I found the right expert to answer Mary's question and more. Our guest today, Lisa Mazze, is a board-certified nutritionist, registered health coach, herbalist, and intuitive eating guide. She is trained in the wisdom of traditions of European herbalism, Ayurveda, there we go, microbiotics, and the Chinese five-element theory, which allows her to offer a comprehensive and universal view of health. Lisa is a member of the National Association of Nutritional Professionals. She is certified in sustainable food systems through the University of Vermont and is engaged in continuing education on mindful eating, mind-body healing, and culinary medicine. Lisa has worked with people who need support in healing from chronic conditions such as parasites, Crohn's disease, celiac disease, colitis, IBS, diverticulitis, hypothyroidism, and autoimmune conditions. Here to discuss her groundbreaking book, Culinary Medicine, that weaves all of her training together with nutrition science to show how we can create our ideal eating plan. Lisa, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure. And I've been learning more and more about how important our diet is. But before we go into that or go into the book, if you heard the question, what would you advise Mary to do?
I love your question, Mary. It's unfortunate that this is the medical system that we're working with these days. It seems like there are a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. And this has to do with so many different factors. Ultimately, what's going on with our bodies is pretty much up to what our bodies are exposed to and what they're given, right? So yes, it's possible that you have parasites. We're not going to know that with muscle testing. We are going to know that with something like a stool test. I always recommend a complete parasitology profile. We're going to know how you're actually assimilating your nutrients with something like a GI map, which is also a stool test. And people don't love talking about this, but actually looking at our stool is really good information about what we're digesting and assimilating and what might be out of balance in our guts, right? Because ultimately, we are more bacteria than we are, you know, Lisa or Alan or Mary. And it's really important to understand not only the uniqueness of our bacteria, but also the delicate balance that can be, you know, offset and put into imbalance through all kinds of factors, not only what we might encounter in the world food-wise, but also what we might encounter in the realm of stress. So I think there's so many different factors to consider. I would definitely think about starting with those two tests and also considering how you might support your nervous system in shifting into a more down-regulated rest and relaxation mode.
Okay, so, and it's interesting that you would go into that because I talk a lot about how our anxiety or our stress works against our immune system. So I love the fact that you went there. Talk a little bit about that and the way that you view that as being so important. Because again, I have my view, but I would love to know how you see this.
Absolutely. And ultimately, we are not comprised so much of our anatomy or our parts, but we're comprised of our somatics, our interconnected organ systems, right? And thinking about the gut and what Mary shared, it becomes really obvious that the gut is the source of so many other functionalities in our body, you know, not just the nutrition that we absorb to produce energy, but also the neurotransmitters that secrete all kinds of hormones, including our rest and relaxation hormones, including our stress hormones or the majority thereof, and including innate immunity, right? The immunity with which we're born, with which we come into the world, is completely governed by our gut bacteria. So if gut bacteria are really running the show in terms of stress as well as relaxation, in terms of immunity as well as digestion, I would think we'd want to focus a little bit more on what we're eating and how we're assimilating it for overall health.
And you mentioned immunity. I have this thought that literally almost all health is building our immune system or stop doing things that are taxing our immune system. Is that kind of what I hear you're saying?
Absolutely. I think that's one component of kind of helping the body constantly return to homeostasis, constantly return to balance. And it's a big one, right? Because our immune system is constantly interpreting information that it gets from the environment, right? Whether it's environmental toxins that we may be breathing in, whether it's viruses or bacteria that our mucous membranes may be encountering, and whether it's the food that we eat. And that kind of translation and interpretation affects so many of our systems, right? Going back to Mary's question, I heard her say, you know, that there's this experience of nausea happening, right? Mm-hmm. So if there were to be pathogenic bacteria in her system, the immune system is working overtime to try to eliminate that. And it's also trying to promote optimal function of the stomach to break down food. Now, the stomach requires bile from the liver to really break food down well, so it can be absorbed in the small intestine. And if that whole cycle of immunity and digestion isn't working well, the liver doesn't recycle bile and prepare it for the stomach well enough. And that is a classic root cause of nausea. So you start to see how all the organ systems interplay, and certainly the immune system and the nervous system are very much at the root of how so many other organ systems function.
Well, I love one of the things that you talk about in your book is the concept of food as medicine. Is that something that is more important now than ever? Or if we were to compare it to 50 years ago, are there things that are happening that that it's even a greater problem if we are not recognizing this?
Absolutely. And I think we live in an extremely modernized and mechanized world that allows corporations to produce non-food, right? Processed mm-hmm. food. And because of that, because our bodies are taking in all of this food that's highly refined, highly separated from all of its integral parts, and the body doesn't really know what to do with that, whole medicinal foods truly are more important now than ever because the body knows what to do with them. It understands how to interpret them, right? There's a big difference between chomping on some sugar cane and eating some highly refined white sugar, right? The sugar mm-hmm. cane has a lot of fiber. It has a lot of minerals and vitamins that the large and the small intestine needs to be able to absorb the nutrition from that sugar cane. White sugar is totally stripped and devoid of that fiber and those vitamins and minerals. So what do you get? An insulin spike and a food that the body doesn't recognize because it's devoid of vitamins and minerals. And so it says, well, let me just go leach some of those vitamins and minerals from your muscles and bones so that I can actually digest this food, right? And then we get all kinds of different conditions related to what the body has to do to handle processed food. So food is medicine now more than ever.
When you were mentioning the difference in the whole foods, one of the thoughts that came to mind for me was our soil. Is that becoming a greater problem also, that if our soil is deficient of these minerals, if we're getting something that we're actually growing, but if our soil is contaminated, is that contributing to our problem?
Absolutely. Not only contamination, but also lack of crop rotation and sort of remineralization of the soil, right? So even if I'm eating some wonderful organic carrots, if they were grown in a field that's devoid of nutrients because the carrots have been sucking it up from that soil for years and years, I might as well be chewing on some cardboard, right? I'm not really getting much from those carrots, unfortunately. And people often say, wow, you know, I got these carrots from the farmer's market and they tasted incredible. They had so much flavor. Yeah, that's because that farmer was probably doing some crop rotation and allowing his soil with some cover crops to regenerate its nutrients for a season before planting it again.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about how much better it tastes. And you know, we shop at a farmer's market, but I have a friend that grows her tomatoes in the backyard, and she's out there and she's constantly doing things with the soil. And it's almost like tasting something different. It's as opposed to buying a tomato at the store and getting one of hers. It is so much better. It's amazing.
It's amazing. I agree. And, you know, not to mention pesticides, right? And fertilizers, those have a huge impact on not only the flavor of our food, but also what we're taking in when we're eating that food that unfortunately contains a lot of pesticides that were either sprayed on it or, you know, put into the soil. Not anything we should be putting into our bodies, unfortunately.
Well, one of the things that I do from time to time on the show, and it's usually closer to the end, but I think I want to give you more power earlier. So I want to give you a magic wand. Okay. And with this magic wand, share with maybe the three top things that you would do, be it with the soil, be it with the food. You have the magic wand. What are the three things you think are the most important things that need to be done for the greater health and happiness for all of us?
Thank you. I love that question. And I will try to narrow it down to three. And I think decentralization and cultural revivalism are huge on that list, right? If I could wave my magic wand and say, all the transport trucks are gone and all the big monocrop agri-farms, all of the contained operations raising factory meat, it's all gone, right? And we have to become self-reliant in different bioregions in terms of our nourishment. I think that would be an incredibly powerful reframe for folks, right? And yeah, I think it would be hard at first for many, and ultimately without all of those larger systems, you know, be it the pesticide companies, be it the large-scale food production companies, we would be able to reconnect to our sources of nourishment and ultimately regain our food sovereignty, right? And regain control over our food. And food sovereignty doesn't mean gardening or farming for everyone. However, I think that most humans gain some level of pleasure and contentment from being in a space where food and herbs and flowers are growing. It doesn't mean you're growing them or harvesting them, but perhaps you're in exchange or conversation with your neighbor or the farmer who's doing it. Perhaps you love taking the carrots and cabbage and spicy peppers that that person gives you and chopping them up and turning them into a lacto-fermented, you know, microbially rich, beneficial food like kimchi or sauerkraut, or, you know, growing up in Italy, we made giardiniera, similar concept. It means from the garden, literally. So I think that decentralizing then allows for that cultural revivalism, that remembering of all of those traditions that we all have around preparing whole seasonal foods and preserving the harvest. And then the community aspect that I think, you know, is something I grew up with in Italy and that would be a natural outcome of this decentralizing and cultural revivalism, where people are coming together. They're more reliant on each other. There isn't this feeling of isolation that seems so prevalent these days. And there's this connection around the things that truly matter most, which are, you know, clean food, clean water, shelter, and community. I'd say that would be my magic wand action.
Okay. Well, let me work with that a little bit. So what I felt when you waved your magic wand was you made me the president. And so, and in doing so, it motivated me to take away all of the subsidies from the large agricultural businesses and utilize that money by giving it to the smaller farmers in a regional area that allows them to better compete, to where now the more inexpensive food is the food that is locally harvested, and the large agricultural conglomerates, without those subsidies, have to figure out how to now provide the same thing without those subsidies, which means that it would either become more expensive and people wouldn't buy it, or they would have to adjust to what you've described.
That's right.
Did I help with your magic wand there?
Absolutely. What a gift that would be.
But now as I'm saying that, but for everybody that's listening, that means that it's achievable.
It is achievable. And yes. So that people are aware of this, there are absolutely food sovereignty bills being passed in different states. Maine is an example. Many of them are led actually by indigenous tribes in different areas who've always held on to their food sovereignty, right? Through farming, hunting, fishing, all of these practices. And there is a turning of the tides. I see it here where I live in the Northeast. We have a network called Food Solutions New England that includes all different kinds of folks in the food system trying to bring about this kind of change. And the way that each one of us can do this as consumers is by spending less money, perhaps, on some creature comforts that we enjoy, and spending more money on something like supporting a farm and learning about the vegetables they're growing and cooking those vegetables and really putting our financial resources toward this change, because it truly is the source of preventative health, right? We all eat food every day. And wouldn't it be nice to not have doctor bills and not have pharmacy bills and have all kinds of medications with side effects and all kinds of mysterious health conditions that don't seem treatable, like what Mary describes? I think that would be wonderful.
It sounds great. Now, for some of the people that maybe haven't tied it together, tie together now how those changes... What does science tell us about what that does to our gut so that we don't have these problems and we don't have these doctor bills and so on and so forth?
Absolutely. So I kind of hinted at this with preparing your own cultured foods, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing that we actually all have in common, every sentient being on the planet, including plants, all animals, humans, we have what's called a last universal common ancestor. Who is that last universal common ancestor? It's bacteria. So the thing that truly connects us all as living creatures in all of the different kingdoms is bacteria. And what that means is that we're in constant exchange, right? We realize we're taking in oxygen from the trees, giving them carbon dioxide, and many of us are aware of that exchange. However, there's a bacterial exchange and conversation going on with all of the different foods that we eat as well. And our gut bacteria is dependent on whole foods because, as I was saying earlier, they contain the fibers, the proteins, the vitamins and minerals that we actually need to produce adenosine triphosphate, ATP, aka energy, but also the fibers and, you know, postbiotics, right? The leftovers from assimilating our nutrients are the food for our gut bacteria. And if our gut bacteria is running our innate immune system, it's running our nervous system, as well as, you know, just general healthy digestion, it seems like this is incredibly important to focus on, and eating more whole food and less processed food has a tremendous impact with how resilient we're able to be in a very changing world.
Wow. I want to let that sit in. I mean, again, if we could just get some of the changes made, I think that there is so much benefit to this, and I'm looking at the time as well. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I would like to. You started to mention more about you know, the, you know, our nervous system and how that is also being controlled by our gut bacteria. So I want to go into that a little bit further. But so for everybody, stay with us. We're going to be right back. You're listening to or you're watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We are talking about our gut and a whole lot more. But the book is The Culinary Pharmacy by Lisa Mazet. Now, when we were just going to break, we were talking a little bit about more about the whole system and how our gut is so involved with everything that we're doing. It actually made me think of the vagus nerve. And if the vagus nerve controls a lot of the specific body functions, such as digestion, heart rate, and immune system, but if these functions are involuntary, what can we do to help maintain our optimal health if it's involuntary?
Absolutely. That's such an amazing question because it's a reminder of how incredibly intricate and complex and refined the body's systems are, right? And I think there's a sense of being able to really trust the body and know that that is the body's goal, to achieve balance, to always return to homeostasis, right? The body's working so hard to do that constantly. And the more we listen to our bodies and pay attention to how we're responding in our day-to-day life, the more we can start to understand what our bodies might need in order to restore homeostasis. Because part of what's happening in the world is that the body can't keep up with the pace of modernization, right? With the pace of change that's happening in the capitalist world. And that has a huge impact primarily on the nervous system, right? And we see this with social media. We see how incredibly troubling and isolating it is for teens and adults. And this is all because of nervous system dysregulation, right? Because of essentially wanting more of that dopamine, one of those kind of like pleasure hormones that we get from interacting with screens. And so we sort of start to forget, okay, how else can I feel those sensations in the real world, right? And part of getting back into being able to be in our senses and be in the enjoyment of the moment truly is regulating our nervous system. And the vagus nerve, which you just mentioned, is our first cranial nerve that's developed in utero. And it's an important one. People like to talk about it, and there's a reason. It kind of has this pathway that allows it to touch every single organ as it's traveling up to the brain and giving it information about how things are going, right? Because the brain's kind of operating in a vacuum. You know, if it didn't have the optic nerve, the vagus nerve, and the autonomic nervous system, the central nervous system, it wouldn't really know what was going on. It wouldn't really know what to do in the world. And its job really is survival. The brain's job is to keep us alive. The nervous system's job is to help us adapt to the circumstances of being alive. And so what we can do to support our nervous system in shifting between the kind of activated, I'm on, something's happening, I'm awake, I'm paying attention, to I'm relaxing, I'm resting, I'm processing, is to create opportunities for transition, right? The nervous system is kind of good at getting stuck in one mode or the other, right? Kind of the more activated or the more relaxed. And the vagus nerve picks up on that. It says, okay, we're real activated. And so then it tells all of the other organs to be activated, right? It tells the heart to be activated and increase the heart rate, tells the liver to be activated, secrete more bile, which could also cause nausea, tells the digestive system to be activated, which could be, you know, gas and bloating, could be diarrhea, right? All kinds of different symptoms can come from an overactive nervous system. However, simply by being aware of our breath, which sounds so basic, but is so powerful, we can easily downshift from that more activated mode. It starts to really, I think, get curious about how to help those that bacteria in the work that they're doing to secrete those hormones.
Wow. Well, let's, I want to kind of go back to, you know, somebody that's maybe in Mary's situation. One of the things you mentioned was a reset, and you started with rest. What are some of the things that, some of the other things that they can do to reset without kind of killing off everything in there? Because that seems to be what the medical approach is. With either side, with either the medical doctor, either the MD or the ND, you know, is put something in there that kills off things. And that doesn't seem like a reset to me.
Absolutely not.
What are some of the things that they can do with food that can be done more naturally to clear out and get that nice, well-functioning microbiome working in their gut again?
Yes, wonderful question. And absolutely rest. I think that giving the gut a rest can be really important. Our digestive system is working so hard for us every day. I often recommend doing a day of, if you are a meat eater, doing a day of drinking broth. You know, chicken broth is great. If you are a vegetarian, you can do a really mineral-rich broth made with lots of veggies, made with seaweed, made with healing spices like turmeric, cumin, and coriander, or rosemary and thyme. And really spend a day drinking that broth. You know, you might drink up to a gallon of it throughout the day to help make sure you're not feeling hungry. That can also send those stress messages, right, to the brain via the vagus nerve, and give the gut a day of rest. And then start eating foods one at a time. And, you know, food allergy tests are certainly out there. They're extremely inaccurate, unfortunately. And they're actually food sensitivity tests, because true food allergies send you to the emergency room with anaphylaxis, right? And many of those food sensitivities are due to the pesticides in our foods. So start trying foods one at a time and kind of let your body say, hey, I'm digesting this well, or actually, no, that doesn't feel great. And maybe you're starting with something very simple, easy to digest, something like winter squash. Then maybe you're moving on to something like brown rice, or millet, a grain that you might choose. Maybe you're moving on to something like chicken or beans. Giving your body 24 hours with each one of these foods, seeing how you're handling the fibers, the proteins, the vitamins and minerals, that can give a lot of information about what's going on in the gut and what the body might need in any given moment to, again, restore balance.
So what's your thoughts on fasting? I know that a friend that I was with a couple of months ago, he read something or somebody he followed or whatever said that, you know, that fasting was the answer for his gut issues. And in his case, I think, I don't remember if it was 4 or 7 days. It seemed like a lot to me. But he said that it failed miserably. And I've done intermittent fasting where I'll do 24 hours, 36 hours, even up to 48 hours. And that seems to be a good thing. Where do you fall on this subject as it relates to our health and especially our gut?
It's a wonderful question. And I think the challenge with not eating food for long periods of time is that the gut says, oh, okay, I guess you don't want me to digest food. I guess we're not going to do that anymore, right? And then the endocrine system also starts talking, all of our glands, right? So the pancreas that secretes our digestive enzymes starts saying, oh, I guess you don't need me anymore. I'm just going to kind of take a back seat, right? And then sex hormones, which are part of our endocrine system, also start to say, oh, I guess we're not getting the cholesterol and the nutrients we need to produce and secrete our hormones. So I guess we're going to take a back seat as well. So not giving our system food for prolonged periods of time kind of causes a lot of our different systems internally to go offline. Not ideal. So when I speak of a fast, I like something like a broth fast. It's something I grew up with. And also, I like it because the body's still getting nutrition, right? And it's actually getting food that's very high in collagen, which is extremely healing in the case of drinking chicken broth. So not only are you giving the body nutrition so that stress hormones and sex hormones and other glands don't get dysregulated, and cause more stress in the body, but you're also providing kind of a healing balm to the gut in particular. Now, intermittent fasting is extremely trendy, and there's a reason for that, right? Because traditionally, people didn't eat between dinner and breakfast, and people ate seasonally, not only according to what was available, but also according to when the sun went down and when the sun came back up. So at this time of year, for example, where I live, you know, if I was eating in accordance with the light, I'd probably be eating dinner at 4:30 and then not eat breakfast until 7:30 the next morning, right? So there you have a really nice long fast. And I think that's ultimately the place to lean into so that we're not causing greater disruption to our endocrine system and all of our hormones, including our stress and relaxation hormones, right? If that's something that sounds appealing, lean more into the early dinner kind of fasting as opposed to the skipped or late breakfast kind of fasting. There's way too much research out there about the deleterious effects of skipping breakfast. Just don't do it. Just eat something within an hour of waking up. It's going to be optimal. And the body doesn't really need a ton of food after 4 or 5 in the evening. You know, unless you're going to go out for a sunset hike, 3 or more miles, you probably don't need a ton of food anyway.
You know, it's, yeah, I'm smiling because I like to think of things and how they motivate people. And so the thought came to mind that, you know, for anybody out there, if you're thinking about like a really long fast, what might motivate you not to do that is the two things that you just said, increase in stress and a decrease in sex. So if those two things are going to happen, I think a lot of people are going to change their mind right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I see a lot of people going through perimenopause and menopause and experiencing weight gain and saying, I'll just fast. And that makes everything worse, right? Because it causes further hormone fluctuations in a system that's already changing and fluctuating. So again, we're all individual. There's no one prescriptive way of eating for all people. That's just not real. All the fad diets out there, I'm sorry, but they're in response to the processed food industry, truly. Ultimately, it is so much about listening to our bodies, paying attention, eating foods as close to the source as possible.
You know, and when you mentioned about the fact that we are all individuals, and I love that, and it reminds me of a story that Naveen Jain tells about himself. Where he came from a part of India where he was a vegetarian. And he said that once he had moved to the United States, he was starting to put on some weight and he didn't like it. And he was feeling a little bit more sluggish. So he kept cleaning up his diet. He was like, okay, that's it. No processed food. And then it was like, okay, somebody told him, well, there's more sugar, in your fruits and stuff. So he started cutting that out. Well, he got to the point in which he was almost only eating spinach.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then, we're all told spinach is what's good for you. And so he said that was almost the only thing that he was doing. And then he had a test that was done. And it turns out that he doesn't do well on spinach. or nightshades, that's another thing I'd actually like you to maybe share a little bit is, with oxalates and nightshades, why is it that some vegetables work well for one person and don't work at all for another? If you could share a little bit of that.
Absolutely. And I love that story. It's such a wonderful reminder of listening to our bodies. Right. Yes. And making sure there's variety in what we're taking in every day and knowing that what we need now is going to change and it's going to be different even 6 months from now. So all different kinds of foods are so fascinating and amazing to me, especially plant foods, right? Because there is some level of hormesis that's going on with plant foods and bitter foods in particular, like spinach, Swiss chard, beet greens, all members of the Chenopodium family, along with quinoa and beets that do contain a lot of oxalates. And hormesis is kind of this concept. It's a Greek etymological root that means, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? Mm-hmm. It's why people like to expose themselves to very quick, stressful situations, like plunging into very cold water. Mm-hmm. The body responds, and then ideally it down-regulates into the rest mode, and everything in the body starts to heal. Because that's the other thing about nervous system regulation. When we're regulated, healing is possible. So that's also going on with food, right? And bitter foods in particular provide a little bit of a challenge to the system, which is great because they are stimulating. They stimulate bile flow in the stomach from the liver. They support digestion. However, they're best in moderation because oxalates in particular are hard work for the kidneys to filter through, right? And kidneys can get a little cranky with a lot of oxalates, and they can start to bind calcium and make these nasty little things that we know of as kidney stones, highly unpleasant. So what doesn't kill you makes you stronger in small doses. And I'd say the same for the nightshade family, right? Tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, eggplant, and a few different herbs like the Ayurvedic herb ashwagandha is a good example of that. And nightshades are full of tons of incredible vitamins and minerals that are extremely supportive and healthy, right? Like if I've been farming all day and my body's really sore, give me a potato. It's got a ton of potassium to help relax my muscles, right? Or if I have a heart condition and my heart isn't regulating properly or my blood pressure is increasing, give me a tomato. That's really going to help my heart, right? However, the nightshade family also has these components that are quite acidic and can be very irritating to the digestive system. So with these kinds of foods, it's all about quantity and it's all about pairing as well, right? And people say to me, you know, you grew up in Italy eating all these nightshade vegetables. Yeah, I did. But, and those were paired with whole grains, right? Which are incredibly balancing to that acidic pH of the nightshade vegetables. They're really rich in B vitamins, which are soothing and relaxing to the whole body. And there's that balance that's created in through food combining, right?
Right. In fact, along those lines of food combining, and you're mentioning Italy, I think wouldn't you also say that it's with good oils? If you're adding good oils or good fats, that's also helping. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And we don't actually digest without fat. Fat is essential for helping us to break down and absorb all of our other nutrients. So knowing where your fats come from is incredibly important. You know, certainly also, of course, meat and vegetables and fruit and grain, but understanding the source of your fats and knowing that I'm truly getting 100% olive oil here, which is not always the case, very important.
Yes. You know, I just glanced over. We've only got about 2 minutes, but what I'd like to do, first of all, I want to remind everybody, the book is called The Culinary Pharmacy. And Lisa, if you could share with us an example of it could be yourself or it could be someone else who's implemented the habits or practices that you suggest in the book, and what changes have they reported to you?
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, I see, you know, certainly in myself, I'm always learning through my body. I've had a myriad of chronic health conditions that I've healed with food. And I see a lot of stories from my clients saying, you know, you're a miracle worker. I've had this condition for 10 years. I never thought I'd get rid of my eczema or my irritable bowel system or my lupus or my Hashimoto's thyroiditis, right? And it's through being really thoughtful about our food and also understanding why certain foods might be beneficial for certain conditions that we really start to reconnect with our bodies, right? So many of us are kind of disconnected from our bodies, especially if we're not feeling well. It's not comfortable to be in our bodies. So by going through that discomfort of reconnecting with our bodies, taking a breath, slowing things down, and starting to give ourselves the foods that our bodies can actually use to heal, as opposed to the processed non-foods that they're not able to use, we can see a tremendous difference. And this is our birthright. We all have the capacity to do this. It's within all of our ancestral traditions, if you look back far enough. So I highly encourage it. Simple but profound. Food is medicine.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much, not just for coming on the show, but for writing the book. For anybody, if you would like to reach Lisa, and I think I've got the website here. It's harmonized-living.com. If you're driving, I'll make sure that we put that on our site, the answers.network site, so that you can pick that up. And Lisa, if you can walk into any politician's office and tell them that you now have a magic wand and they need to make changes, okay? They need to start sending the subsidies to the right people so that we can get the right food to the people.
That's right. All of us can start doing that. Call your representative.
Absolutely. And again, thank you so much for everything that you're doing to make a positive difference in the world.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it.
All right. And for everybody out there, be with us next week when we're going to be joined by Judy Wilkins-Smith as she discusses her new book, Decoding Your Emotional Blueprint. And again, everybody, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network. I'm willing to bet that you will find something that will benefit you or those that you love. Or just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and other popular podcast platforms. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. And if you don't like what you hear, let us know that too. It's another way that we can get better. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.